Real Madrid stands on the brink of another historic UEFA Champions League title. What can this man deliver in the final?
Cristiano Ronaldo! It's another hat-trick! It's another brilliant performance from the Portuguese! And it's 1 foot into the final!
Juventus, meanwhile, are just one game away from becoming kings of Europe for the first time in 21 years.
Mario Mandzukic, it's a third goal of the tie for Juventus. They could be on their way to Cardiff now.
The stage is set. We have a full preview of the Cardiff showpiece to come right here on the UEFA Champions League Match Day Live podcast. But what a match we have in store. It's Juventus versus Real Madrid in the UEFA Champions League final, just like it was back in 1998. I'm Rob Daly, and in this special preview show, you'll hear from the likes of Max Allegri and Zinedine Zidane ahead of the showdown in the Welsh capital. There's so much to talk about with my guests today, UEFA.com's European football expert Chris Parrott and Matchday Live's commentator for the final, Richard Connolly. Gents, great to have you with us. Richard, we're so excited for this one, aren't we?
Hugely so, Rob. I think these are the two best teams in the competition. I think they've proved it right the way along. Terrific balance in the Juventus side. Great defensive ability. Extreme attacking potential with Real Madrid. Goals galore. And from a personal perspective, the chance to call the biggest game in world football. Hugely excited.
Two true heavyweights as well, Rob. Madrid, a third final in 4 years. Juve, a second final in 3 years. And I don't think you can argue that either don't deserve to be there this campaign. You just have to look at the teams they've beaten en route to the showpiece in Cardiff. So many top clubs that they have dispensed with, and so many wonderful subplots too. Zinedine Zidane against the team he used to play for. Gonzalo Higuain going back against Real Madrid. I think he's got something to prove. I think it's an incredibly tight final to call, and it could be an absolute cracker.
Well, you guys have got so many notes in front of you. I can tell you're well prepped for today's podcast. So loads to get through. Of course, you can hear every kick of the final at the National Stadium of Wales right here on Matchday Live. We're live on UEFA.com and on the official UEFA Champions League app. The show starts at 19:30 Central European Time this Saturday. That's the 3rd of June. Write it in your diary. Set a reminder on your phone. Do not miss this one. And also, ahead of this preview podcast, we wanted your thoughts as well. At Champions League on Twitter is how you've been getting in touch. We're going to be putting your questions to our panel throughout the show. So let's start by reflecting on our two finalists' progression to the showpiece, starting with the Italian champions. Here's Chris McKee.
It took until match day two for Juventus to really get going in Group H after a 0-0 draw against Sevilla. The goals then flowed in a 4-0 win at Dinamo Zagreb. A trip to France to face Lyon was next, and not for the first time, Juve had their goalkeeper to thank.
Alexandre Lacazette, Lyon's star man, is saved by Juventus' star man, their hero goalkeeper.
After Buffon's penalty save, the 3 points were sealed with this stunning late strike.
Oh, it's a tremendous goal! Juan Cuadrado for Juventus!
In the return fixture in Turin, Juve's record signing set them on their way.
It's Higuain! He slots it in! Gonzalo Higuain from the penalty spot!
But an 85th minute equaliser saw the old lady miss the opportunity to qualify for the knockout stages with two matches to spare. However, a place in the last 16 could be achieved with victory at Sevilla. It didn't begin well.
A wonderful strike, and Sevilla have the lead. It's Nicolas Pareja.
A penalty on the stroke of half-time bought the scores level before a Leonardo Bonucci volley edged them in front. Mario Mandzukic then made the game safe.
And that does the job for Juventus. They are heading into the knockout round of the UEFA Champions League for the fourth season in the last five.
Juve finished top of the pile in Group H following a routine home win over Dinamo Zagreb on match day six. Porto were then dispatched in the last 16.
Casillas goes the wrong way, right in the corner. Juventus 1, Porto 0, 3-0 in aggregate.
The small task of Barcelona awaited in the quarterfinals, and in one of the great UEFA Champions League nights, Luis Enrique's side were blown away.
Deep to the back post, headed in! Juventus have a third goal, and it's Giorgio Chiellini!
Juventus' defensive qualities were once again demonstrated when they held Barca to a goalless draw in the return leg at the Camp Nou. Max Allegri's side had reached the last four, where Monaco were lying in wait.
Gonzalo Higuain in the right place at the right time again to apply the finishing touch. It's Monaco 0, Juventus 2.
Another victory and another clean sheet meant Juve had one foot at the final. Then, in the second leg, their place in Cardiff was secured in some style.
Here comes the Dani Alves! Oh, it's absolutely magnificent! It's brilliant from Dani Alves!
Juventus had done it. A second final in three seasons. Can they go one better this time around?
It has been an impressive run to the final. Group stage, Sevilla, Lyon, Dinamo Zagreb for Juve, and then Porto, Barcelona and Monaco all knocked out on their way to Cardiff. And Chris Parrott, I'm looking at that run and I'm struggling to see a stage where Juventus really looked in trouble.
Right from the beginning of the season, we heard on Matchday Live from Patrice Evra, I think, on Matchday 1, he obviously left, is now at Marseille, but he talked about Juventus should be considered as one of the favourites for this season. They went into this campaign with that motto, if you like. They embraced the idea of them being a major club, a major player. They almost expected to be at this stage, but it's one thing thinking that, it's quite the other going through a season like they have. They've barely conceded a goal. And as you mentioned, they've been so impressive, particularly, I think, in the quarterfinal against Barcelona and then the semi-final against that thrilling Monaco side who so many perhaps expected to reach the final the way they played. And Juve just blew both of those teams away.
Yeah, Barcelona and Real Madrid have dominated the competition over the last three seasons. But if you think about what Juventus have achieved domestically, winning five straight titles before this season and the two domestic doubles, of course, the European Cup, the UEFA Champions League had to be at the pinnacle of their ambitions. They've sold big players, yes, but they've spent big, big money to assemble the side that was capable of going all the way. And actually, I would say a squad that was capable of going all the way. Because if you listen back there to the clips from the group stage, it jogs the memory. Nine different players for Juventus scored in the group stage alone. It underlines they've got players to come in different positions, players who can make an impact off the bench as well. They, of course, have built their success on defensive solidity, but they're far more than that. And they've been particularly impressive throughout the competition. But as you say, it's always after Christmas where the best teams really do pick up the level, and they've certainly done that.
And I think you've seen, particularly in the semi-final, Gonzalo Higuain was signed, the most expensive South American player of all time, remember, when he left Napoli last summer. He came up with huge goals against Monaco. Dani Alves plucked from Barcelona for his experience, but also for his, you know, immense quality. And as Richard said, they signed those two players not for 5 years' time, but for here and now to win the UEFA Champions League. They've been major parts in the reason they are at the final. And of course, they've done it all. You know, they lost the most expensive player in world football last summer in Paul Pogba. He's gone to Manchester United. You sort of forget that 9 months on. But what they did is they did back themselves in the transfer market. One of the main reasons they're here, but they signed the right players. And as Richard said, great players come to the fore at the big moments. And certainly Juve's big players have done that.
Well, you mentioned it there, Chris. They did sell Paul Pogba. I'll put it to both of you. Are Juve a better side now without him?
Well, I think they're an extremely well-balanced side. Could they have been an extremely well-balanced side with him in the team? I'm sure they could be. One of the things that they have under Max Allegri is this extraordinary tactical flexibility where they can play four at the back, they can play three at the back, and they can change within games. They change with and without the ball. Could he have fitted into that? I'm sure he could, but have they coped without him brilliantly? Yes, they have. Pjanic in that midfield has been a huge part of things this season. He, like Kroos and Modric for Real Madrid, glorious passer of the ball, but don't underestimate his overall contribution to the side. Something maybe people have criticised Pogba for not necessarily bringing. Of course, he brought huge assets, but they have gone in a slightly different direction without him.
And I'm not privy to Juve's finances, but I just wonder, did they have to get that money for Pogba in order to sign Gonzalo Higuain? Because, you know, they weren't too dissimilar in terms of those transfer fees. And I think Higuain has absolutely brought something extra to Juventus. They've always had this wonderful defensive solidity. We know that they're Italian champions. Of course, they're going to have that. But they've also now got a guy at the other end of the pitch who is the master finisher. And yes, Dybala has been key, but you just have to look against Monaco in the semi-final. Higuain's two goals were absolutely massive in that first leg in Monte Carlo, and I think he has given them an extra dimension. And if they wouldn't have been able to have that by keeping Paul Pogba, coming back to your original question, then maybe, yes, it was the correct decision to sell him and get in Higuain.
Higuain also has the hunger. He has the kind of shared mission built into his DNA, because he didn't win the UEFA Champions League while he was at Real Madrid. Since he's moved to Italy, he's not been able to win it with Napoli, now with Juventus. So he shares that key motivation that somebody like Buffon, of course, on his mission to win it, shares as well. So it's the whole club, 21 years, but these individuals that have been to different places around Europe and are now coming together to try and win it for the first time together.
And something you mentioned to me earlier, Higuain, the only player not to be rested in the league, to have played a part in every single Serie A game this season for Juve. An appreciation of the Italian side now from a player who faced them with Monaco in the semi-finals, Bernardo Silva.
They have a different way of playing. They are a more intelligent team, more defensive team as well, more experienced. And when we played against Manchester City and Dortmund, both teams were trying to attack, were trying to do an open game. And when you play against an Italian team, it's a little bit different. It's true that it wasn't easy for us to play against this Juventus team. They have one of the best squads in the world. But we're very proud of our work on this Champions League. And I think to reach the semi-final was amazing for us.
Bernardo Silva there, then of Monaco, of course, now of Manchester City, having already made his move to England. Richard, you've seen a lot of Juventus in the competition this season. Has there been a key moment in this run for you?
Well, I think the destruction of Barcelona at home in the quarterfinals sent out a very, very clear message. Barcelona had just produced the greatest comeback of all time, TM, to beat Paris Saint-Germain in the round of 16. So you could say in one sense, there was a momentum behind them. It was like, what will Barcelona do next? But Juventus at the Juventus Stadium have been unbeatable for nearly 2 years now, and they kept Barcelona out. The great attacking Barcelona side, they kept them out over two legs. 5 clean sheets out of 6 in the knockout phase, 9 out of 12 in the UEFA Champions League this season. You can be a wonderful attacking team and you can still be stopped by Juventus. They proved that to everybody that night. And that's why many people will still back Juventus to win the trophy on Saturday night.
And we'll be getting to some of your thoughts as well, your tweets on Juventus that you've been sending in. So Juve haven't won the UEFA Champions League since 1996, but Real Madrid, well, they've won 2 of the last 3 finals. Dave Beckett looks back on how Zinedine Zidane's side got to Cardiff.
The holders began their Group F campaign in dramatic fashion, going behind against Sporting at the Bernabeu before Cristiano Ronaldo levelled in the 89th minute. Then this happened.
This is last chance. Left-footed ball. Free header. Goal, they've done it. Right at the death. It's Alvaro Morata.
Borussia Dortmund were up next. And this time it was Zinedine Zidane's turn to suffer late heartache.
With 3.5 minutes to go, Dortmund are level again.
A resounding 5-1 win at home to Legia was followed up with a surprise 3-3 draw against their Polish opponents in the return fixture. Then on match day 5, Real Madrid were aided by another late win against Sporting.
That might do it for Real Madrid. Karim Benzema with a terrific header.
The win in Portugal saw Real Madrid reach the last 16 for the 20th season running. But top spot would be decided in the final Group F fixture at home to Borussia Dortmund. It began well.
Benzema doubles his and his team's tally, and Real Madrid on course to top the group tonight.
But unfortunately for the Spanish side, lightning was to strike twice.
Equalising goal! Dortmund are back from 2 behind to level it. And they're going through as group winners as it stands. Incredible comeback.
The result meant Real Madrid had to settle for second place. They were then drawn to face Napoli in the round of 16.
Alvaro Morata, the substitute, buries it. And that is job done for the holders of the UEFA Champions League.
A pair of 3-1 victories were enough to see off the Italians before they were pitted against Bayern and their former head coach Carlo Ancelotti in the quarter-finals. After a 2-1 win in Germany, Real Madrid looked set to reach the last 4. But Bayern had other ideas and took the game to extra time. The holders needed a hero.
Hat-trick man again! Cristiano Ronaldo surely seals it now for Real Madrid.
City rivals Atletico were once again the opponents in the latter stages of the UEFA Champions League. And it was a familiar face that rose to the occasion.
It's another hat-trick! It's another brilliant performance from the Portuguese!
Despite an early scare in the return leg at the Vicente Calderon, the holders reached the final for the third time in four seasons with a 4-2 aggregate win. Can they now become the first side to retain the trophy in the UEFA Champions League era?
And of course, if they do win it, it would be a 12th European Cup success. No one is even near to that tally for any European club. So Dortmund, Legia and Sporting in a tough enough group. And then Napoli, Bayern, Atletico seen off en route to the final. Chris, could you possibly pick out a key defining moment on their way to Cardiff?
There's been a few. Just look at that calibre of teams they've beaten, Rob. Napoli, Bayern and Atletico. Extraordinary. Couldn't have picked three harder sides, I don't think, in each of those draws. I'd go for the semi-final, the first leg against Atletico. They blew Diego Simeone's side away in the Bernabeu that night. They won 3-0 at home. No one does that against a Simeone side. Atletico have been so difficult to beat. You know, one of the reasons they'd reached two finals in 3 years before this campaign. And that man, Ronaldo, with a hat-trick on the biggest stage. That night, it was pretty close to the perfect performance, I think, from Real Madrid. And they had actually struggled on a number of occasions. I think back to Napoli in the second leg in Italy, where they were teetering. They ended up winning comfortably, but it wasn't that easy. Bayern took them to extra time, but that night, they were magnificent.
OK, let's do the Ronaldo chat now then, shall we? We'll have to get out of the way eventually. 14 goals in his last 9 games for Madrid. He scored in the first 2 minutes of the game. It's Malaga on the final day of the Spanish Liga season to win them the title. This year, Richard, he has been rested. And Zinedine Zidane said him and Cristiano sat down at the start of the season to work out how they could have him peak at just the right time.
Yeah, that was a pretty fruitful conversation, you would suggest, wouldn't you, really? I mean, it just shows, again, that the subtleties to Zidane's coaching of Real Madrid over the last 18 months or so. Just the 40 goals this season for Ronaldo, which is way down on the previous, what, 6 seasons. 10 goals in the competition this season, of which 8 have come in the semi-finals and quarter-finals alone. And you check out Ronaldo's great pile of statistics and you see 103 goals in the UEFA Champions League, way out in front now of Messi, and the rest are a distant third. But more than half of those goals, 52 to 51 now, have come in the knockout phase. So it's not just about doing it, it's about doing it when it really matters.
And frighteningly for Juve, he says he's as fresh as he's ever felt before UEFA Champions League final. And this is his 5th, remember, having also won it and reached it with Manchester United. He has been exceptional. I think we've seen a slightly different Ronaldo as well this season. Much more of almost an orthodox centre-forward, I think, now. I think back to when they won it originally against Atletico in Lisbon, there was that front three of Bale, Ronaldo and Benzema. It was all very fluid. I think Ronaldo now, he does stand on the edge of the box. He doesn't as much get involved in the build-up because, you know, when they play the ball into him, if anybody's going to finish the chance, it will be him. So we've seen a slight shift as he now reaches the age of 32, slight shift in how he has to approach the games. But my word, it's just as fruitful when it really comes to it.
And if I think back to other UEFA Champions League finals, 2014, but especially 2016, Ronaldo went to those finals not looking 100% fit, having played time and time again, not even missing a minute, because some head coaches probably didn't feel they were in a position where they could really rest him, such as the pressure of being Real Madrid manager. It's a testament to Zidane, I suppose, that he's been able to do it.
Yes, I mean, they obviously had the conversation about managing his minutes during the course of the season, but at the same time, he has also signed a new contract to take him further into the future. So he has that reassurance behind him that they're not just managing his departure, they are encouraging him to succeed over a long period of time. It's also a fact that maybe sometimes getting an injury can actually be a blessing in disguise, because he got injured, didn't he, in the UEFA European Championship final, and then had the start of the season, which he missed. And maybe just that gave him a period of refreshment mentally, yeah, which has also enabled him to pick up his level as he goes through the season, rather than just playing essentially continuous football all the way through. So maybe in the long run, that injury has done him good, or at least in terms of this season.
Yeah, and I think just to come back to your point there, I think Zidane does deserve massive credit, not just for Ronaldo, the whole squad rotation. Remember, he only took over midway through last season. So many great coaches have gone to Real Madrid and this pressure has just been on them. And, you know, they've looked like they've had the weight of the whole world on their shoulders. Zidane walks around with a big smile on his face. He's such an enormous character that I think he can, even with someone like Ronaldo, he can be on top of him, if you like. And there's only, I can't think of anybody, actually, frankly, in Real Madrid history that could probably be coach and do that to a player of Ronaldo's stature. But they've worked together extremely well. And I think both recognise that they have to work together. And, you know, Ronaldo not playing every minute is the best for the team. And now, all of a sudden, he is, as I said, if he's going into this one as fit as he has ever, then Juve are going to have a particularly difficult task on Saturday.
With Zidane, I think it just comes down, it can be many things, but he Panenka'd Buffon in a World Cup final. That's it.
Job done.
I have no more to say.
Well, I just wonder if he is reframing how we see top-level management and to what extent it is man management. More on Zidane in a moment. Aside from the progress of Real Madrid and Juve, gents, let's talk a little bit about the competition as a whole. Alf on Twitter wants to know, who has surprised you in the competition this season? Chris, let's start with you for that one.
Kylian Mbappe. Yes, we knew he was an extremely prodigious young talent. But remember, he hadn't started a UEFA Champions League match until Manchester City in the last 16. He scored that night and all of a sudden just exploded onto the world stage. And actually, I'd throw in Monaco as a whole for that. Yes, we knew before the start of this season that they had an extremely talented group of some of the best young players mixed in with the likes of Falcao, you know, the aged, experienced head. But my word, they were magnificent. And it took an extremely good side in Juventus to stop them in the semi-finals.
I would think of Christian Pulisic for Dortmund and his impact in big games. It was Benfica, I think they played, wasn't it, at the start of the knockout phase. And he scored a really important goal in that particular tie. And just in addition to his prodigious technical ability, but an ability to take charge of games in the very biggest stage. And I know the UEFA Champions League didn't end happily for Borussia Dortmund, but they will come again, and Pulisic most certainly will too.
Let's get through some of the top scorers from the competition this season. Lionel Messi is still the outright top scorer in the UEFA Champions League, going into the final with 11 goals. Ronaldo breathing down his neck with 10. Cavani, Lewandowski both have 8. Aubameyang, Griezmann, and Kylian Mbappe, 7, 6, 6, respectively. And then assists, Neymar has got 8 this season. Ronaldo, 6. He's second in both charts, Cristiano Ronaldo. We can't keep talking about him. But looking at Neymar with the 8 assists reminds me of the Paris Saint-Germain game. I actually think maybe the first leg was the best team performance I've seen from any team in the competition this season. But the capitulation of what happened in the second leg, Richard, was that the most exciting, thrilling moment from this season?
It was absolutely extraordinary. I mean, I was watching the Dortmund game that night at the same time. It was one of those nights where you just thought, I'm not getting on tonight. It was all happening in Barcelona. And it was kind of amazing to be a fan and listen to it and think, they're not, are they? And when Paris got the goal back and you thought, OK,
we all thought it was done by that stage, didn't we?
It's not realistic now. And then, of course, it became more and more probable. And the last minute and the 6th goal, it was extraordinary in whatever capacity. If you were there, if you were watching on television, if you were listening with us on the radio, it was something I think you'll never forget.
Always in those moments, look at how the fans react in the stadium, and there's that, you know, collection of people just, they look shocked as well as they're delighted that I can't believe this is happening. And do you remember before the quarterfinals then, Barcelona, of course, went to Turin in the next round and got thumped 3-0, and everyone was like, wow, this is, you know, one goal fewer. But that's really where you notice how good Juve are. They never had a look in the second leg. And to bring it back to Saturday, I think we've spoken about how brilliant Juventus were in the first leg in the quarterfinals, but my word, they really proved in that second leg. Barcelona had quite a lot of belief, given what they'd done in the previous round against Paris Saint-Germain, and Juve just said, nope, not us.
Much more to come on this special final preview podcast shortly. We're going to hear from Max Allegri, Zinedine Zidane, and Luka Modric too.
Dizemos não ao racismo.
Nein zum Rassismus.
Nein til Rassismo.
Non au racisme.
Nein til Rassismo.
Non al racismo.
Cristiano Ronaldo, Manuel Neuer, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Vincent Kompany, Caroline Sagar and Lionel Messi are just a few of the European football stars saying no to racism. European football united against racism. Respect.
You're listening to UEFA Champions League Match Day Live.
So the 2017 UEFA Champions League final is Juventus against Real Madrid at the National Stadium of Wales in Cardiff. I do think this is the two best teams in this season's competition. Let's preview the final in depth now, and we'll start by hearing from one of Real Madrid's key men this season, midfielder Luka Modric.
We are lucky to be in the final again, second consecutive time, against a great team like Juve. It's going to be tough games, but we are looking forward to challenge. We are confident as well, and hopefully we can defend our title.
Luka Modric, they're outstanding for Real Madrid. Let's just look at a couple of stats about these two teams. Just a real juxtaposition between the two. Real Madrid, top scorers in this competition by far. They've scored 32 goals, averaging nearly 3 goals a game en route to the final. Juve have conceded just 3 in the entire campaign. Real Madrid have conceded 17. And when I hear figures like that, Richard, it just makes it all the more unpredictable for what on earth is going to happen in Cardiff on Saturday.
Yeah, it really does. And I think it emphasises the importance of the first goal to me, because if Juventus get it, then they're going to be extremely difficult to stop. And if Real Madrid get it, it'll bring Juventus out and the counter-attack will be that much more open to Real Madrid. It's difficult when you think of it in those terms to see the side that scores the first goal losing the final. But yeah, I actually think, I said throughout the competition that Juventus had a wonderful balance about them. They have kept the door completely closed, but they equally have tremendous ability to create chances, tremendous creativity and firepower up front. But actually, you'd say Real Madrid are a very well-balanced team as well, I think. I love the balance of their midfield with Casemiro and Modric and Kroos. And I think they're both terrific teams. And I think that stat will lead us away from the reality of the game, which it will be very close and very cagey, I think, for long periods. It won't just be one team blitzing the other team and the other team sitting back and putting up a bust. It won't be like that at all.
I hope you've jinxed it and it's really open now,
yeah,
Richard, as
let's
well.
Let's hope so.
I think it's very simplistic to think of it as Real Madrid attacking and Juve defending. I wonder if a lot rests on how Max Allegri sets up Juventus, because when I think of them at home, against Barcelona in particular, they really went for Barca and they started and played very much on the front foot, scored 2 terrific goals through Dybala. Would they risk that in Cardiff, or will they be happy maybe to sit back and rely on their defensive strength? I sort of hope they do start on the front foot, because I think Real Madrid have looked susceptible at times on their run. I think of Napoli away, I think of Atletico in the semi-final when they had a 3-0 advantage and Atletico came at them from the first whistle, scored 2 goals, and they were really teetering until that brilliant skill from Benzema set up Isco for the away goal. And I just wonder, will Juve be brave enough from the start to go for Real Madrid? If they do, I think A, it could be a thrilling open final, and B, I just wonder whether that might be the best way to go at Real Madrid.
If I think back to Juve against Barcelona, my recollection of that first half in Turin was Juve went at Barcelona and it absolutely paid off. So many tweets that have come in. Saad Qureshi says, are Juve the only side capable of stopping Madrid's goal-scoring streak? Chris, you mentioned it's probably best not to focus too much on attack versus defence. But Richard, we have this situation where, and I looked at it, Juve in this competition, in their 12 matches so far, played a back 3 in 6 and played a back 4 in 6 matches. We defensively don't know what we're going to see from them.
And it's possible we'll actually see a back 3 and a back 4 within the same game. Dani Alves is kind of key to this, because they want him, I think, pushed as far up the field as possible. And we saw what he did to Monaco in the semi-finals, where he scored one and basically set up 3 of the 4 goals that they scored. Here's a man that we've thought of for much of the time as a right full-back. But he's so much more than that. And will that mean Barzagli playing effectively as a right full-back at times to allow Alves to push further forward? And then when they don't have the ball, Alves will pull back and Barzagli will nudge across and there'll be a back 3 or a back 5, essentially, if Alexandro comes back on the left-hand side. So they have this flexibility, and sometimes maybe it's just a function of us needing to define exactly how they're playing that makes us draw a diagram at the start of the match, whereas in reality, this team is so tactically flexible, so well coached and so experienced that they will change that given the situation as it develops during the course of a match.
I mean, it's so hard to actually do that. You don't see many teams who can switch mid-game. I remember seeing Juve about a year and a half ago when they played Chievo in Turin. I was amazed just watching how everyone just knew automatically what to do in any given scenario without even looking at each other. It was this perfect symmetry of the formation.
You know what? 2 years ago, remember, Real Madrid were knocked out by Juventus in the semi-finals when Max Allegri was in charge. And I remember that night in the Bernabeu in the second leg, they seamlessly went from three at the back to four at the back, back to three at the back. It's wonderful to watch. And just to pick up on Dani Alves, yes, key going forward. If he can do that, that also might stop Marcelo going the other way for Real Madrid. Now, he is a vital component in how they play. He isn't always tactically spot on in his positioning, Marcelo, which is one of the reasons he's such a threat for Real Madrid going forward. Can Dani Alves push him back? What's going to happen on that side? It's going to be fascinating.
Think back to 1998 and the first Juventus-Real Madrid final. Real Madrid had Roberto Carlos playing at left back. So Brazilian fullbacks have always kind of been a theme when these two have met. But yeah, I mean, Marcelo and Dani Alves, and you've got Alexandro, of course, on the left-hand side as well. Cafu was saying in the week that for Brazilian fullbacks, I mean, these guys are right up there with the very best of all time. And whoever wins that battle, Marcelo against Dani Alves on Saturday night, has got a major advantage.
And we may have a situation, if Carvajal's not past fit, but we're hearing he probably will be fit enough to play, Danilo could play, and we could have four Brazilian fullbacks.
Yeah.
Just barely defending, just running each other. Juventus have not won the UEFA Champions League, of course, since 1996, but they've been losing finalists four times in that 21-year period, including 2 years ago against Barcelona. That was Max Allegri's first season in charge of Juve, and he has continued to enhance his squad.
The team has changed a lot, because compared to the 2015 final in Berlin, the squad has changed in almost every position. I think only four or five players are still here. Our confidence has increased, our awareness of our own ability has gone up, the atmosphere has improved. So I'd say those are the areas where we've made significant progress. Only a few people get to lift this trophy. It's not something that happens every year. In the last 3 years, we've played one final, and this will be the second. But this time, we have to lay our hands on it.
Max Allegri did that. I like that bit where he said only three or four players were left. I can imagine him looking around the dressing room just seeing completely different guys surrounding him. But it is dramatic. I mean, we look back and Tevez, Pirlo, Morata, all key players, Pogba in 2015. How has Max Allegri managed to not just change the personnel, but build on a winning mentality season on season?
Well, first of all, astute signings, some of them for big money. We mentioned Higuain, but also I think Dybala coming in from Palermo, who is now itching towards that extraordinary high standards that the likes of Ronaldo has set in big games. But also in that clip there, he said, awareness of our own ability. And I think that word belief is massive in sport and particularly in football. And I think Juventus do think themselves as a huge club. And as I mentioned earlier on in the podcast, they were the people who were saying we should be considered favourites. So many teams and players, you know, when asked that, they say, oh, no, don't want to put the pressure on themselves. They did at the start of the season. They have under Allegri since he walked through the door. And I think that's been absolutely key. And actually, they're coming up against Real Madrid, who, when Zinedine Zidane first walked through the door, he was very quick to say, yeah, we're Real Madrid and we should be winning the UEFA Champions League. So many coaches don't like to say that. But actually, we've got two serial winners going head to head. And I think the way that they approach their games and their training sessions, thinking they should be winning, it's probably a major reason why they do end up being victorious so often.
There's been so much change in the Juve dressing room. One mainstay is Gigi Buffon, Richard, of course, who is still looking to win the UEFA Champions League. And loads of the tweets we've had in have been on the iconic Italian goalkeeper. Skyrex8 says, could Buffon win the Ballon d'Or this year? Menyo on Twitter says, would winning this cement Buffon as the best goalkeeper ever, or does he already have that title? It's hard to define that kind of thing, really, Richard, but it would be very special for him, having been a losing finalist in 2003 when they got beat by Milan, to actually win this competition for the first time.
Yeah, I think back to the semi-finals, and he was asked before those matches whether it was finally going to be his year, and he said with a broad smile on his face, I thought it was my year for each one of the 22 years that I've been playing professional football, and it never has been. So maybe this is the one.
Is he the best of our era? I mean, if we say 21st century onwards, is he the best goalkeeper prosperous since the turn of the century?
Yeah, it's difficult because we had Casillas when they played Porto in the round of 16, and we were sort of talking about them as the best two goalkeepers of their generation. And would Buffon swap his trophy cabinet with all the domestic titles in it for Casillas's, given that Casillas had the UEFA Champions League in there? They both have World Cups in there, but Casillas had a European Championship as well.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, so, I mean, you know, both right up there. And how would you choose between them? You know, you think back to goalkeepers of the way back past, when centre forwards would basically knock them out in challenging for a ball, and I'm sure those guys would say, well, listen, it was different in my era, look what I had to contend with.
No gloves.
I didn't get the protection from the referee. So, you know, it was a totally different job in those days. But in terms of our generation right now, he is a standard bearer, and he is somebody, I think, particularly with the relegation that Juventus were forced to endure, and when he stayed with the club and came back up, how many players of that reputation would go through that, even if promotion back was guaranteed, stick with the club, and to eventually secure the one trophy that he's been after for his whole career right at the end? There'd be an awful lot of people who would smile if that was the case.
And I just would love to see the celebration from Buffon. I imagine it would be a length of the pitch run and then hanging off the crossbar, but
it would involve the crossbar,
it definitely would, but we also have to remember how brilliant he's been this season. I think of the save against Iniesta in the quarterfinal. He made one of the best saves ever against Lyon in the group stage, which was, I think, from Nabil Fekir, which was deflected. But he has been magnificent. And we mentioned there way back in 2003, which is 14 years ago now, he saved two penalties in that final shootout defeat against AC Milan at Old Trafford. Now, many goalkeepers have been considered heroes of the final for saving one penalty in the shootout. Buffon was unfortunately on the losing side, despite saving two spot kicks.
And let's see if he can have a big role to play. Still looking cool as ever as well, between the posts for Juve. Let's switch our attention to Real Madrid now. Let's hear from their head coach, Zinedine Zidane, who, of course, spent five iconic years at Juve, and it's still a team he admires.
Oh, je pense qu'en fait, ils ont fait
I think they're having and have had a great season. As a team, they've shown just how good they are. I'm not going to speak about their strengths or weaknesses. We know they're a great side, and they've been showing that all season long. We know it will be a wonderful final, which is the most important thing. I believe the paths that both sides have been on to get to this stage show that we will have a fantastic final between two teams that deserve to be there. It will be special for me. I spent 5 years at Juve, which is a great club that helped me develop and become a man, to grow as a person and cement myself as a player, because they gave me the chance to become a different player, and I thank them for that. Juve will always have a special place in my heart. The game will be special, but as soon as it kicks off, I'll be on the other side. I'll be on the Madrid side, and I will only be thinking about my team.
There are so many individual interesting stories running through this final, and of course, Zidane facing Juve is one of them. He was there from 1996 to 2001, picked up a couple of Serie A titles, lost in 97-98 UEFA Champions League finals. Chris, it was the move that made him, essentially, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. We think of Zidane now as one of the greatest ever footballers. He'd won the UEFA Intertoto Cup before he moved to Turin at Bordeaux, always considered a wonderfully gifted player. But he went to Juve. You mentioned the two UEFA Champions League finals he lost, including against Real Madrid in 98. But that same year, he won the FIFA World Cup for France on home soil. And it was with Juve, really, that he became this sort of all-conquering midfielder. And then he got that big money move to Real Madrid. And, you know, the rest, awful cliche, as they say, is history. But yeah, he truly came of age at Juventus. It's a very, very special club to him. He said that immediately after the semi-final win against Atletico, when he knew he was going to be playing Juve. He said, yeah, look, they're a special side. They're a side he still holds very dearly in his heart. But on Saturday, he's, as he mentioned there, 100% Real Madrid. But it is just another lovely subplot. He's Zidane against not just a former club, but a club where he really made his name.
Do you have to make the move from Juventus to Real Madrid? To Real Madrid or Barcelona, if you're going to really guarantee yourself as a player the chance to win the biggest trophy of all. That's what Zidane, in the end, felt he had to do, having lost in the two finals. But just to underline the nature of the potential achievement for Zidane this season, this stunned me, really. Real Madrid have won the Spanish Liga 33 times, and they've won the UEFA Champions League European Cup 11 times now. But only twice in their long history have they won the two competitions in the same season. Both of those occasions were in the 1950s, 58 and 59. So think of all the success they've had since then. They've not won both competitions in the same season, since the era of Di Stefano, of Puskas, of Hento, of Raymond Kopa. So this is era-defining for them. It's not just about repeating in the UEFA Champions League, which no team has done in the new era, sure. But for Real Madrid, in club context, even given what they've done, this is massive.
I'm going to have a stat off with you, Richard.
Oh, God, if you could outdo me after that, I'll be devastated.
No, to be honest, you win. But I was looking in terms of Zidane and the European Cup, which has gone since the mid-50s. If he were to win it on Saturday, only two coaches ever would have won the competition more, Bob Paisley and Carlo Ancelotti. That's the era he's in. He would join Guardiola, Brian Clough, Sir Alex Ferguson. You know, these guys who have been coaches forever. And he's been a coach at Real Madrid for 18 months.
It would be staggering.
Let's call it a draw.
Let's look at some of the team news ahead of this one. So Juve, the main doubt for them was Sami Khedira, but he did play in the final game of the season after picking up an injury against Monaco, and we suspect Khedira would get the nod ahead of Marquinhos in midfield. But Real Madrid is where things get really interesting. This week, Zinedine Zidane has said, fully fit, 23-man squad for the final. So we're talking Carvajal, who's been trying to return from a leg injury. And we really are talking about Gareth Bale here, out since April the 23rd with a calf injury, back in full training. He says he's not 100%. And Richard, this has been the thing that's been dominating the messages that we've had come in from many listeners on Twitter at Champions League. Adam Najim says, who should play, Bale or Isco?
Well, I think with Bale, there's an extra emotional factor in that Cardiff is his hometown. That's the first thing to say. So imagine how desperate he is to play in his home city, effectively. Now, if he's saying he's not 100% fit, then I think that's an enormous hint that he isn't going to be in the starting 11. Now, even if he was raring to go, would you pick him? That's an even more interesting question, because the impact that Isco has made has been dramatic. And I think, frankly, at the moment, how could you drop him? How could you leave him out for
Absolutely.
A game? What would that do to him? What would the message be to him about how you rated his chances for the short, medium term? So I think Isco is going to keep his place on the answers to all of those questions, really.
I think Zinedine Zidane will be happy that everyone's guessing, including Juventus, because I think setting up to face Bale or Isco, Real Madrid are slightly a different team, dependent on where they go. I just wonder whether he'll also be not happy that Bale has mentioned himself that he might not be 100% fit. How can he, given how long he's been out for? Certainly not 100% match fit. Almost takes that decision of whether you are considered to be dropping Gareth Bale for his Cardiff homecoming out of the equation. If he's coming back from injury and therefore he's fit enough for the bench, then it's almost an easier decision for Zidane. I agree. I think Isco will start. And given the way he played in the semi-final in particular, absolutely magnificent. And if Real Madrid want to control the game, then I feel having, you know, Casemiro does that magnificent shielding job, but having Isco, Kroos and Modric, absolutely vital in terms of Madrid dominating the game.
Yeah, because they're going to look to try and take control of the midfield here. And surely with Isco, that's better. I would also put forward the case that I think Ronaldo, who we're now calling a centre-forward, is a better centre-forward when Isco plays. And I would point to the start of the Malaga game at the final day of the season when Isco picked up possession. Ronaldo knew where to run, Isco knew where to play it, and the title was won inside 120 seconds.
Well, yeah, and look, if you want an impact sub, imagine being Juventus if it is tight and you look over at the bench and Gareth Bale was warming up in his home city. I mean, it's not a bad substitute to bring on.
No, it would be staggering. He would also be the fifth player in European Cup history to be winning the competition in the city of his birth. The last was Nicolas Anelka back in 2000. We're all with the stats here. We're ready.
that's pretty good as well, yeah.
So Real Madrid playing with potentially either this diamond midfield or 4-3-3. Have Real Madrid really set out a message to the rest of Spain as well, having won the league title, because they really had to hold off Barcelona in that title challenge?
Yeah, I mean, they were pushed right the way to the end of the season. Did that mean that they didn't have the opportunities to rotate in the latter part of the season that maybe Juventus had in one or two games that allowed them to keep their team a little fresher? Juventus' season, of course, went on a week longer than the season in Spain. Yeah, I mean, as stated before, the fact that they have held off Barcelona in the domestic competition gives them enormous confidence. I mean, we've touched on Juve, who now achieved three domestic doubles under Max Allegri, which must mean that they're feeling invincible every time they go out onto the field. I think for Real Madrid, the psychological effects of holding off Barcelona and winning the Spanish Liga are equally huge. So what we've got here, in addition to two technically gifted, brilliantly set up teams, is two teams in peak confidence. And that, again, just adds to the marvellous mix on Saturday.
So Real Madrid, of course, going for the double. Let's not forget Juventus are going for the treble. They beat Lazio in the Coppa Italia final recently too. And of course, this is the second time that Juve and Real Madrid have met in this final. Predrag Mijatovic was the match winner last time back in 1998, and he's spoken to Matchday Live about that special night. Matt Rose has more.
Madrid's victory in Amsterdam is widely considered to be one of the most important days in the club's illustrious history. Despite winning six of the first 11 European Cups, the Spanish giants had gone 32 years without lifting the trophy before their trip to the Dutch capital. It meant the pressure was on.
That gave me extra motivation. I thought to myself, we are playing against Juventus. The last time Real Madrid won it was in 1966. I did the calculations, and I was raring for us to win the final in Amsterdam in order to become part of the history of the greatest club in the world, Real Madrid. There was plenty of incentive, and that was the only thing all of us could think about.
With the current Madrid coach Zinedine Zidane in the ranks, Juve were big favourites. The Bianconeri were competing in their third straight final, but after a goalless opening 65 minutes, Mijatovic's moment arrived midway through the second half.
In the end, Roberto Carlos's shot fell to me, and in that millisecond, I realised that this was it, and I had to score. I reacted instinctively. I did what I did. The ball went into the back of the net and suddenly it was bedlam. My life flashed in front of my eyes and I remembered that I'd promised my friend to celebrate with him. So I ran over to him. It was phenomenal and unforgettable.
Mijatovic's close-range finish proved to be the winner and also the start of another golden era for Madrid. They went on to win the competition again in 2000 and 2002. The question now is whether they can add the 2017 title to their list of honours as well.
Matt Rose there reporting on Madrid's win back in 1998 with Predrag Mijatovic, who heard from there getting the match winner on the day. And of course, it is a rematch this season on the 3rd of June, live on UEFA.com and on the official UEFA Champions League app. You can hear full live radio commentary for free. And we're on air from 19:30 Central European time. We'll have the best build-up, big name interviews, key reaction too. And there will be a final review podcast available after the game. Don't forget the UEFA Champions Festival will be taking place in Cardiff for 4 days across the final weekend. More than 200,000 people are expected to attend the free event. And one of the main attractions will be the Ultimate Champions match on Friday, the 2nd of June. This is always great fun. You get to see legends playing against each other, pulling out the old tricks. Last year, there was the likes of Roberto Carlos, Luis Figo and Lothar Matthäus playing in the game. So we've been looking forward to the big match in Cardiff, not the Legends game, of course, the big one at the National Stadium in Cardiff. But next, we're going to talk about another major European final.
You're listening to UEFA Champions League Match Day Live.
We now know there will be five teams from England in next season's UEFA Champions League because Manchester United overcame Ajax 2-0 in the UEFA Europa League final in Stockholm. A deflected effort from Paul Pogba gave United the lead before Henrik Mkhitaryan hooked the second over his shoulder.
Of course, it's a very important trophy for us because we won the trophy and now we have the opportunity to play in Champions League for next year. I'm really very excited. I have no words to say. There are only emotions and I'm thankful to my teammates for a great job and a great win.
That's Henrik Mkhitaryan. Let's hear from his manager now, Jose Mourinho.
It's a fantastic way to be back to Champions League, but also winning a trophy. We felt that we could do it since the moment we lost four players with surgeries, plus two with important injuries. We didn't have the numbers to fight in all fronts. We had to choose, and we choose Europa League because for us be back to Champions League and win a trophy is better than finish top four.
Jose Mourinho there. Well, we're lucky enough to have a Manchester United and an Ajax, and I'm going to use this word, expert, with us. And we'll start with you, Chris, because you covered a lot of Manchester United's Europa League run to the final, commentating on them as they managed to get to Stockholm. They were clearly over the moon to achieve that.
A very emotional success, given it came just a couple of days after the Manchester bombing. All the players were very quick to pay tribute to those who had sadly lost their lives. But this was a game that Jose Mourinho had built up as season-defining for a couple of weeks, when he basically said, we're not going to be able to finish top four. This is our route to the Champions League. You heard there for Mourinho and Mkhitaryan speaking after lifting a major European trophy and already saying one of the most important things about it was the fact not just they'd won the competition, but they were back in the UEFA Champions League. And they delivered when it really mattered. Two trophies in his first season for Jose Mourinho is a successful campaign. Henrik Mkhitaryan, absolutely massive en route to Stockholm. And then in the final, he was magnificent. And Manchester United are a club who consider themselves as belonging in the UEFA Champions League. They're very, very special evenings at Old Trafford under the lights. And they're back in this competition next season thanks to a win against a hugely exciting Ajax side. I think in the end, another Mourinho masterstroke. My word, he knows how to tactically set up teams in big games.
Well, I would argue as well, I think it was the biggest gamble of his managerial career to date, to put a whole season onto a game against an unknown entity, really, in this Ajax side, Richard. Very, very young, lots of talented players, impressed en route to the final. It looked like the sense of occasion slightly got to that group of players.
I would argue that that's a little unfair. I mean, we have to see this in the big picture, that this was the first Dutch team to make a major European final for 15 years. And in that time, the gap has only got bigger. The resources that Dutch clubs have, and yes, Ajax are the best resourced of any of them, but still, the gap between the Netherlands and the rest of Europe, particularly the English Premier League, has never been bigger. So for them, the achievement in getting to the UEFA Europa League final was enormous in itself. And the way that they played, particularly in the home matches against Schalke and Lyon, was hugely exciting. And because of it's a young side, the players are coming through the academy, the manager in his first season at Ajax with his links to Johan Cruyff, it's a really captivating narrative. And some of these players are stars already in Matthijs de Ligt at 17. I mean, his upward curve has been dramatic, to say the very least. But they were up against a side assembled expensively and put together on the day quite brilliantly. The game plan simply snuffed Ajax out. He had an answer, Mourinho, for absolutely everything. And they never got going as a result. And to then pin that on the players and say, well, you know, you were a bit young and you didn't live up to the occasion in the end, that's totally underestimating what happened to them from Mourinho and Manchester United. They were outdone on the day, yes, but I don't think you could level it at the players' bottle.
You come up against United and Mourinho in a final. He has a wonderful knack of winning them, and they were tactically absolutely superb.
Just a couple of little quick things. Fellaini, much undervalued maybe at Manchester United by many, but one of the things Ajax have done throughout the season is, particularly as it's gone along, win the ball back super quickly and play a through ball, get a chance on goal. In order to snuff that out, United always had the option of hitting Fellaini quickly with a long ball, and he dominated in the air. So that tactic was completely nullified. Yeah. It was one of many. Herrera on Ziyech in the first half, Ajax's playmaker. He got into the game later, but Herrera was magnificent. They had an answer for everything.
Let's turn our attention back now to Juve against Real Madrid. Let's go to some of your tweets, actually. First of all, Real Madrid Forever 13 on Twitter. I think we know who you support. Which team is under more pressure going into the final? That is a good question. Chris?
I think Juventus. They haven't won it for such a long time. There is the feeling that this is their time, not just the players they brought to the club in the last couple of years. Also, how many more chances are Buffon, not just Buffon, remember, Chiellini and Barzagli. Bonucci's a couple of years younger. Those three great centre-halves have never won the UEFA Champions League either. It's not just Buffon who hasn't. So there's a lot of players who I think this may well be their last opportunity. Who knows what happens in the future. So for me, it is Juventus that the pressure are on. Real Madrid have been here. They've lifted the trophy before.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Juventus is BBC. Are they going to get the chance to win the tournament? A lot of people are talking, particularly with the link, with Antonio Conte at Chelsea. and John Terry having moved on from Chelsea, that Chelsea might seek a central defender in the course of the summer. And with Antonio Conte's links to Juventus, might Bonucci, for example, be a target? Is this side going to be together beyond this season? It won't be the same. It looks like the moment for Juventus, but they might have only one. And I think given what Real Madrid have achieved over the course of the last three seasons, yes, definitely Juventus is the answer to that question.
OK, predictions are pointless, but I like seeing you two squirm. So let's get predictions. And I am going to go for a Juventus victory on the night. Let's have you
score.
First.
Score line?
Yeah, score, yeah.
Score line, come on.
I don't know. Who knows?
No.
All right, yeah, OK, Juve to win 1-0.
Yeah, I can see the sense in that. I've already kind of expressed my feeling that it will be tight. I mean, for all that we'd like to see Juventus go on the front foot and really attack, this is not a two-legged encounter. You don't have the home leg to really make an advantage of. So I suspect it will be tight. And maybe 1-1 again and more extra. Maybe Sergio Ramos to equalise in the 90th minute and then Real Madrid on penalties.
I think tactically, they will be smart enough to beat Real Madrid. And I'm going to say they're going to beat them by 2-1.
Gents, thank you very much. So Match Day Live returns on Saturday, the 3rd of June, for the big one in Cardiff. We have full live radio commentary as Juventus take on the holders Real Madrid in the National Stadium of Wales. Our programme begins at 19:30 Central European time with all the build-up. And we have big name interviews too, including special features with Gigi Buffon and Cristiano Ronaldo. And then afterwards, we'll bring you all the key reaction to what's sure to be an enthralling game. We'll be live on UEFA.com and on the official UEFA Champions League app, so you can listen to us wherever you are. And don't forget, there'll be another podcast to download after the final with the best analysis of the showpiece. Keep tweeting your thoughts to @ChampionsLeague using the hashtag MatchDayLive. But for now, from Chris Parrott, Richard Connolly and myself, Rob Daly, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to UEFA Champions League Match Day Live.